Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 178.
This week on the podcast, apparently the line in Louisiana politics is two prostitution scandals. Still okay, one prostitution scandal, and one exorcism.
Dark Horse candidate Wouldn't Vote is sneaking up on Ted Cruz and the other frontrunners in the latest GOP polling.
And Julia Brownlee, the world's most desperate Democrat, won't help the world's most desperate refugees.
Jeb exclamation point Bush is the only GOP candidate forgetting to make coded Nazi references in his discussion of our refugee policy.
And Anonymous will defeat ISIS using the most annoying meme ever created. We're apparently never gonna give you up, Rick Rowling.
Trump supporters show themselves to be, just as we suspected, a literal racist mob.
And Sarah Palin is planning to do something, we think, according to what we imagine she was trying to say, using her words.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
This week is our favorite kind of week.
It's so good. Yeah, because it's sort of like, there's a lot of quasi-news, sort of, but it's all sort of like, just like fun and...
fun news.
Like, fun in the way that, I mean, some of it's not really fun, but it's fun in the sense that, you know, we get to call people out for doing crazy things.
We love
or
that.
Taking terrible votes, and we've got some
it's our
fun...
our favorite thing to do.
We've got some fun polls, and people dropping out of races, and other and electoral politics.
For probably like, the first time ever in our 178 episodes with Louisiana.
Good news.
Good news, guys.
Certainly good news from Louisiana.
Yeah, but we've never begun...
We may have accidentally led with it at some point in our lives. Who
right.
knows? But, I mean...
It's never been to tell you something great that happened in Louisiana.
It was never to tell you that a Democrat was getting elected to statewide office, because the last time that happened was 2008 and we weren't doing the podcast.
Correct.
Then. So we can certainly tell you that it's the first time that that has happened.
So you may recall that we talked a few weeks ago about David Vitter, the embattled Republican candidate for governor in Louisiana. He's a current senator. He
right.
has already declared that he's not going to run for re-election.
Which is exciting.
Which is also exciting.
Yeah.
But so he got put into this runoff in the Louisiana race.
Right.
And suddenly got stuck in this very concerning race because as the runoff happened, it was revealed that he was involved in his second prostitution scandal.
Right. We already knew that he had one because it was like from 2007.
The
so we had already
Adam
we'd forgiven
situation.
Him for that
right.
already.
Right.
And, or Louisiana Republicans have,
right.
anyway. The rest of the world
the rest of the world maybe hasn't. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
But so as he's running in this runoff, it gets revealed that he has a Louisiana prostitution scandal as well.
Right.
Where he had
some
basically...
Some investigative journalist drummed up some... The New York Times article said, you know, in... I think they said something like, in classic carnival style...
Carnival politics, yeah.
Politics, like, which is apparently... what happens in Louisiana. It sounds like yeah. a fun place to be involved in politics, potentially.
Totally.
Yeah. anyway, yes, revealed, and we had talked about this, that he had had, like, they interviewed an escort that he was using for, like, a year that he was having some relationship with. So,
right.
two
And also tried
scandals.
To force to have
right.
an abortion, I believe.
Sure.
There was, like, some yeah. element of that, too.
Yeah, why not?
In any case, because of that, he got... He suddenly was sort of in a very tight race.
Right.
This is a state that, as we said, has not elected a Republican to statewide office since 2008.
Right.
That's not a favorite move of theirs. They had this very interesting Democrat running who is basically a Republican.
Right. He was the perfect Democrat to run in a red state because he, like you said,
he is a Republican.
Right, he's socially conservative. He comes from a family of rural law enforcement officers. He graduated from West Point. He served 8 years of active duty
right.
in the Army.
He's pro-life.
So he's pro-life, right. So he was...
He was the Republican they were all looking for.
Exactly.
When they were looking for a Republican who hadn't been involved in two prostitution scandals.
Right.
So he got 56% of the vote.
Yeah.
He won by a fairly large margin. His name yeah. is John Bell Edwards, and he was a state rep in Louisiana.
Yeah, he was the minority.
He was the minority leader
in the House.
Yeah. It didn't help. A few things didn't help. One of which is that Bobby Jindal's approval rating is 20%.
20%.
Currently in yeah. Louisiana.
Well, the budget there is a giant flaming
shit show of a disaster.
Right now. Yeah. They've been sort of like careening from one, you know,
crisis to another. Yeah.
Budget crisis to another. Yeah.
Also, they had a really heated primary on the Republican side. So he kind of got taken down
by
the heated Republican
they did.
Primary.
And actually, well, and I think I'm almost certain, but I think that they have jungle primaries because I think Edwards was in the same
primary. The same primary.
Because that's
Ooh.
What led to a runoff was that nobody got 50% in that primary, actually.
Right.
Because Edwards won that primary with like 40% of the vote, but he was running against like three or four Republicans or something like that.
Right.
But they were all trying to like really take him down. And, like, as it got toward the end, there was, like, this real sort of, like, anybody but Vitter movement that got started. Some super PACs got started.
Two super PACs were formed just to defeat him.
Right, exactly. And it was really the Republicans who started going running with these scandals.
Yeah.
And started, they were calling him a liar. They brought up these scandals, like, in the last debate of that primary. So the real Republicans really sort of, like, ate their own here, which is... makes it all delicious. More delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, so now we have, there's an open Senate seat in Louisiana. We have a Democratic governor who, the thing that this is going to change, because as we said, he's kind of a Republican.
Right.
He's pro-life. He's against gay marriage.
He's pretty pro-gun.
He opposes Common Core. He's against legalizing marijuana.
He's against gay marriage.
Right, I said
against. Oh, sorry.
Twice. He's against it twice.
Twice, yeah.
But he wants to take the money for Obamacare.
Yes.
He wants to take the money. He wants to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah.
He looks like somebody who's... It takes somebody who's not a Republican at this point to fix their budget disaster.
And he was really... And he was really ran pretty heavily on the Medicaid expansion, actually.
Yeah.
Because he said that he promised that he would do that on day one. He also, as the minority leader, he had tried a few times unsuccessfully to override Jindal's
veto not taking the money.
So,
This is the policy that really
turns out. Unlike Kentucky, the people of Louisiana would like to have some health care that they currently don't have right now.
Correct. Yeah. Also, and not really even unlike the people of Kentucky. First of all, I have two things to say.
Yes.
One of which is there was a really interesting op-ed or editorial in the New York Times. No, it was an op-ed in the New York Times. About why why communities that are truly poor seem to be converting to red voters. Like, what's happening with among the very poor that's making those communities into Republican communities?
Right.
And what they basically say is that the very poor are just not engaged and they're not voting at all. So in a place like Kentucky, you know, where a lot of the poor are rural poor and they're dispersed, they're living in communities where the sort of people that are like one or two steps above them on the economic scale are voting Republican because they're seeing all these very poor who cannot get themselves out of poverty and thinking, why are we supporting those guys? They're so lazy, which is, of course, it's like they're sort of running with a narrative that we've seen many times before. It's a welfare queen narrative, essentially. But this time it's focused on rural white people instead of urban black people. But ultimately, it's the same story.
Progress.
Yeah. But so in any case, in a place like Kentucky, as we said, the turnout was terrible in that race.
Yeah.
And so it's not really even that I don't think that the people of Kentucky are now voting against Obamacare. It's that there was this like weird echelon of voters that did it.
Yeah.
Because of that, I think probably Matt Bevin is starting to walk back some of his super anti-Obamacare rhetoric.
Yes.
He's now saying, because, you know, as soon as he got elected, everyone was like, so 400,000 people are going to lose their insurance. What's your plan? And he was like, okay, hold on.
Wait a minute.
Well, that's not what I was saying. Yeah. Which is, it was exactly word for word what he was saying. Now he's saying he doesn't want to completely abolish the expansion.
Mm.
He just wants to shift to a different kind of system where people have to pay more for the benefits if they use more, you know.
Yeah.
Basically, making people pay a higher share of their healthcare costs, which again, is a regressive tax that's the number one way to bankrupt everybody in the state. So it's a terrible plan.
It's better than making them pay for all of it and taking it away from them.
Correct.
Though. I mean,
exactly.
It's still not the right thing.
But
it's more of the right thing.
But it's more of the right thing. And he's walking back the rhetoric because he's suddenly faced with a much worse PR issue, which is what do you do when you're the guy that took away 400,000 people's health insurance and had no way to get them care at that point? Like, there's no plan to replace it.
And shut down the exchange. That allowed them
to
buy it for cheap anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So
in any case, what we're seeing is that some of these anti-Obamacare victories are a little bit more complicated, and that, I mean, to some degree, this could politicize those voters who have been, you know, who are reliant heavily on government support and don't vote because they don't feel like the system is, you know, responsive to them.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, also, it just sort of like shows the degree to which you can't actually enact your political will fully, even in a state where the voters seem to say one thing, because the citizens of that state don't necessarily say that.
Yeah.
So in any case, victory in Louisiana and people walking back horrible things in Kentucky.
Right.
So victory
in Kentucky.
Victory. It's some kind of victory after a massive defeat.
Right.
Here's some more victory for America.
Yeah.
Bobby Jindal out.
out. We're staying in Louisiana
here,
guys.
Surprise out from Bobby Jindal, yeah. Because he had announced this huge tour and then was like, nah, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Earlier in the week, he had filed his papers to run in the New Hampshire primary and had announced more stops on his 99-county tour of Iowa, which is how many
shocking that there's 99. Yeah. I'm surprised there's more than two.
Yeah. So, anyway, but... Yeah, it was...
He made an appearance on Fox News and was just like, never mind, it's not my time.
Yeah. I'm wondering, the polls for that governor's race were garbage for the Republican going into that race. And then he obviously got blown out. That would have looked very bad for him to not be able to, like, pass his governorship along to the Republican in
Louisiana.
A deep red state. Yeah,
and
exactly.
To be running with a 20% approval rating in your own state is a tough mountain to climb.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if he literally announced early in the week to just not even... just go back to whatever hole he lives in. I mean, not have to... He doesn't have to run for president any longer. He doesn't have to face questions.
His hole is the governor think tank that he's going to go to. It's like his Gingrich Productions, basically.
Yeah, totally.
We told you, like, 4 years ago about how Newt Gingrich was shutting down Gingrich Productions, which was his secret production company that didn't do anything. Bobby Jindal has a think tank called America Next, that he's going to go work at now because he's just going to crawl back into his 20% approval rating hole and do nothing, I assume, for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
Well, he doesn't have the...
Anything that he does is a mess.
He's the lamest of the lame ducks.
He couldn't be lamer.
Couldn't be lamer.
Could not be any lamer. Yeah. But it's interesting because he was... the people that he was polling medium okay with... are Iowa evangelicals, and Ted Cruz, as we're going to talk about in a little bit, is really seeing a big surge in Iowa.
Right, so a lot of people think that for the Ted Cruz taking.
But little known fact, Donald Trump is still beating Ted Cruz among evangelicals.
Which is wacky.
Banana pants, mind-boggling.
It is, it really
it's
is.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to get to that in a second. But I am sort of curious who all of you think is going to be the next person to exit the race.
Yeah.
I have some personal theories.
I do too.
I mean,
I had one a while ago and it was wrong because I thought it was going to be Rand Paul, but he's been sort of like pulling his life together marginally.
Yeah, I think soon-ish we're going to see Santorum because he's not getting any traction. I think he was holding on for his moment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Pataki's and the whatever, like they're not even relevant. Pataki is literally running a front for a book tour right now. Like this is not the presidential race is an irrelevant part of
but
his
I think
running
Santorum
for president.
But still loves to tell the story about how he was polling at this percentage the last time in Iowa.
I think he might
probably hang through Iowa or at least closer to see if he sort of like starts to see a little bit of movement. But
I think though that he is so caught in the bottom of the middle of the bottom. Yeah. He's like nowhere.
Yeah, he's like
he's
a
not
2%er.
In any way. Like no one ever talks about him.
No.
And that's just in Iowa. He's a 0%er in
everywhere
New Hampshire.
Else.
So I mean, obviously, like I said, Lindsey Graham's going to have to drop out at some point. But he's not running. He's not doing anything. So, like, he doesn't have to drop out.
Right. The people who drop out.
He wants to hold out till South Carolina. Right.
The people
who
drop out first always seem as though they're more shocking. Like, people were shocked about Scott Walker.
Right.
But that was because, like.
Didn't have any money.
They have these sort of, like, you know, they're running an entire nationwide campaign. And it's sort of like when the money runs out, like, they have to go. Rick Santorum is, like, not even running a real campaign.
No.
So, if he doesn't have any money, then it doesn't matter because there's not
what's
there's
he
not
up to?
Staff to pay. There's not there's nothing to do.
I think, though, that we are about to be upon the eve of the Chris Christie demise.
Oh, I hope so.
Because he, like Jindal, has a low approval rating in his own state.
Right.
He's not gaining any traction in this race. I think he wants to hang on to New Hampshire because he thinks that New Hampshire could be, like, his real bread and butter. But as of right now, he's only polling at 5% in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's really going anywhere there.
Yeah.
And he's not going to ever crack the top five in Iowa. So he's never going to get the primetime play he needs to pull well enough in New Hampshire to be in the conversation at all.
And he's now in the undercard debate, too.
He's in the undercard debate now.
So he can't even have a moment on national television anymore.
Right. And he doesn't have a demographic. Like, Huckabee has people that he is advocating his crazy ideas too.
Right.
There's like a movement behind Huckabee. It's a crazy bananas movement.
Yes.
But I've had to use the word bananas more times in this first opening segment than I ever have. But
it's been appropriate every time you use
thanks. It. Thanks. but he's got crazy people behind him, but he has a movement behind him. So he's got the audience for his book tour still growing.
Yeah.
Chris Christie doesn't have an audience.
No, he doesn't.
Just people, like, it's his audience is just angry people who want to talk about how Social Security is about to disappear. Nobody wants to talk about that.
Right.
It's like he's telling us the things we don't want to hear. And, like, who wants to be the guy telling everyone the things? You don't want to be the guy advocating for the person who's just telling us things we don't want to hear.
I know.
He's just, like, delivering bad news left, right, and center that he's made up.
Yeah.
And also, at some point, he's got too many scandals under his,
I think that his best plan is to, like, start trying to be as bombastic as Donald Trump, because he has it in him.
No,
and then when Trump
Donald
crashes
Trump
and burns,
is taking his
if
shtick,
he does, which he doesn't look like he's going to,
oh my
but
God.
But if he does, like, he could be the
he
the
could
Trump
be the next
waiting.
Bombast.
Yeah. Yes.
No, I know. It's so funny to see how he, like, Christie has been in the conversation in this year's election this whole time. We've known that he wanted to be the bombastic one. We've known all of that. And Donald Trump just sort of, like, snuck up behind him and was like, I'm crazier.
I know.
And, like, now he's the one who's saying the things that we, telling it like it is.
Right.
And Chris Christie is the one telling no one anything because no one is listening to him.
Exactly.
In any case,
we had some fun polls this week.
We posted this on Thursday, I think.
Yeah.
But we have an update for you.
Yeah.
We posted a Reuters poll that showed that, as of November 17th, wouldn't vote had just edged out Jeb Bush for fifth place
right.
in the primary.
They have this like 5-day rolling poll, basically,
which
that
is
they're
fascinating
just, like, always
to play
updating.
With.
It's fascinating to play with because you can, like, basically set a bunch of, like, things. To,
right,
like,
set a bunch of parameters. You can see, like, what people, what Republicans in the Northeast are thinking and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But poor Jeb Bush said no one else.
So as of the 17th, wouldn't vote was polling at 6.4% and Jeb exclamation point was polling at 6.3%.
Yeah.
As of November 20th, wouldn't vote's lead had increased because
pulling away.
It went. Its actual polling numbers went down slightly to 6.3%, but Jeb Bush's dropped to 5.5%.
Yeah.
So wouldn't vote is leading by almost a point over Jeb Bush in the primary. This is among Republicans, by the way. If you add Democrats to it, it's like 44% wouldn't vote.
Right.
But among Republicans, more people are not going to vote than are going to vote for Jeb Bush.
And a lot of other people, too.
Yeah, and a lot. I mean, like, and everyone below him. Because
he was
fifth place.
Fifth place, right. So Wooden Vote was in fifth
Wooden
place.
Wooden Vote is sneaking up on Ted Cruz as we speak.
Right,
Ted Cruz
exactly.
is not that far ahead of Wooden Vote.
You know who's not sneaking up on Donald Trump? Anyone.
Any person.
Nobody's
According to this poll, he is polling nationally at 38.8%.
That's insane.
Ben Carson
guys.
Is in a solid second place at 14.7.
Yikes.
Because Rubio is in third at 10.3.
Holy moly.
Trump, like, these people are not even in some sort of legitimate contention. Donald Trump is
he's
in a place
three times
where
more
if
than these
four
people.
Candidates
three
drop
four
out,
times.
He could be at over 50%.
Yes.
That is the wrong decision, America.
Yeah.
Even for the dumb people that are voting in this primary to begin with, this is the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And his lead really has grown pretty dramatically over the last week. It was at 30% like
really
10 days ago.
Loving
that
the racism
rhetoric
that we're going
to
talk about
in response to the refugee
soon.
Crisis
yeah.
is going over
winner.
Like gangbusters with the Republican primary voters.
Yes.
CBS also released a poll that does not have Wooden Vote as an option. So unfortunately, they had to pick somebody.
Yeah.
That shows that Trump is leading in Iowa at 30%. And Ted Cruz just edged out Carson in second place.
Right,
he's really
huge,
seeing...
That's the huge news from
that's
this
the huge
poll,
news from that
the,
poll.
The surging
Ted
Cruz.
Ted Cruz is starting to surge. He's at 21%, and Carson's now down to 19.
Right.
And Cruz is sort of on the rise there. So
we're
expecting, you know, as we said, Trump is slightly edging him out with evangelical voters, but he's been really laying the groundwork to get those voters. And also, Carson's people, as this foreign crisis has erupted... are starting to realize that he's not the right choice for a president that has to talk to people outside of America.
Right. Well, and I think that's what's happening here, because Cruz and Carson are sort of mostly playing with the same pool of people. Now, their rhetoric is much different, obviously, because Cruz is angrier.
Right.
And Carson's, I almost said crazier, but not crazier.
No,
I think
Carson's
is
just
actually
sort of meandering.
Crazier, but, right. But, like, they're it's the same Cruz sort of,
like... Cruz is more aggressive.
Right. It's the same group of people. So I think the more that you see Cruz go up, the more that you're going to see Carson go down. And also, if Carson doesn't perform well in Iowa, then he's... That's
all he... Yeah, he's not going to perform well in New Hampshire.
We know he's polling sort of well nationally, but
he's
not going
he's
not going to win South Carolina. He's not going to win New Hampshire.
He's tied in third in New Hampshire, so he's not going to get out of the New Hampshire
this
pack.
Is pretty... Even though he's in third, this is pretty tragic news for him because he was in first when we had polls for you.
And
a
nationally,
weeks ago.
He was almost neck and neck with Trump for a long time.
Yeah.
So Trump is really pulling away with it.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Rubio is in fourth place in Iowa at 11%.
Yeah.
Those are the only people above in double digits. Bush is at 5%, Fiorina at 4%, Christie, Paul Santorum, and Jindal, who before he dropped out, were at 2, and Huckabee and Kasich at 1. It's crazy to me that Kasich is only pulling at 1% in Iowa. As much as I understand why that's happening,
right.
I feel like he gets a lot of play for someone who's only pulling at 1% right. in Iowa.
And he also sort of, on policy maybe isn't necessarily with them, but he also sort of like has the folksiness that I'm surprised that like Iowans are sort of like not kind of getting more behind just based solely on personality.
It's kind of surprising, the Kasich thing. Also, voters in Iowa were asked who is ready to be commander-in-chief.
And this is insane.
This is an insane poll. First of all, too many people said that Trump was willing to be commander-in-chief. But the person who really ran away with this poll was Ted Cruz. A person who, we want to remind you, has no foreign policy experience.
Right.
He ran for office for the very first time in 2012. If you want to look at our bio of him, we just posted that on Meet the Candidates. But he was not in elected office. And it's not like he was in the State Department before that.
No.
He was a lawyer, in Texas. He was the assistant attorney general in Texas. He's a guy who like was a good debater in law school and then went to go work for Chief Justice Rehnquist in a terrible move then became a lawyer.
He's a man who like has a literal 0%. You know,
maybe they feel this way because he's Canadian.
Reason to feel like
he's an international citizen.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Canadian Cuban.
Right.
He must know things about the world.
Understand the world. Yeah. But I mean, this is somebody who literally has no experience with either the armed forces or international policy at all,
or governing anything. Because he's only been a senator.
Right. He's never governed a thing in his life, and he literally just appeared out of nowhere to run for Senate in Texas.
Right. I mean, you can sort of like talk about the merits of whether you agree with Ted Cruz more than you agree with Ted Bush, right. Jeb exclamation point Bush.
Right.
But like, to think that Ted Cruz would have more of the things that you would need to be able to lead the country than Jeb Bush. Like, and I'm not saying those are the reasons that you should vote for someone.
No.
Because I am a person who thinks that you should vote for the person whose idea
you agree with the most.
I feel like that's why we have a primary. But like, if you're asked this specific question,
the
like,
person
if you're
who's
being
the most
honest,
ready to be the commander in chief of the United States
is not Ted Cruz. It's just like pick someone else.
Literally
like,
anyone.
Even
else.
If you like Ted Cruz and you say you're going to vote for him, like
that's fine.
He's not the answer to this particular question.
No, this is a different question.
This is a different,
that is a different answer.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, these people.
Loyal.
But also the other big story out of that, as we sort of talked about a second ago, is that Carson is sort of hemorrhaging evangelical support.
Yeah.
And that's, a lot of that support is going to Cruz. Like something like 15% of it has gone directly to Cruz, but Trump is still edging Cruz out with evangelicals. So it's sort of a curious situation.
Yeah.
In New Hampshire, Trump is also too far ahead. He's got an even greater.
Yeah, he's three times ahead of Marco Rubio, who's in second place, but who has doubled his support from last month.
Yeah.
So that's the big story here, besides the fact that Trump is still
beating
everybody.
I love, by the way, all of the stories here are the second place stories.
I know.
Who's losing to Trump now? Exactly. Like, Rubio did double his support, got him into double digits. That's great. He's still three times behind Donald Trump. Carson and Cruz are now tied in third place in New Hampshire at 10%. Kasich there is at 8%. That's the only reason he's even a person whose name we know.
Yeah.
But Santorum, Graham, and Huckabee all at 1% there. That's I feel like what is Santorum thinking could happen here?
I don't know.
Like he's not like Christie is at 5%. I can see how someone like Rand Paul can justify staying in, and Carly Fiorina, because she still could feel like her moment. You know, she had her mini moment, but she feels like now her like moment could
come. She also feel like she might be running for vice president, too.
She's 100% doing that. It's not even a question.
Yeah.
But I see why she's staying in the race. I don't... Santorum, it's like... when do you even hear his name? I forget that he's running most of the time.
I know. Yeah.
It's like... It's true. It's too bad, because he was finally being a populist.
Yeah. And we finally got some South Carolina
polls. Some South Carolina polls. They're just as terrible as all the other polls.
Yeah.
Because Trump is winning with 35% there.
But he's not ahead by... Three times,
no,
though.
Because
he's only
ben
ahead
Carson
by two times in this one. Ben Carson
at 19%. Rubio at 16% there. That's kind of a surprise, because that's a little reasonable for them in South Carolina.
It is,
Cruz at 13%. I see him sort of increasing his margins.
He's another
there.
Person who could eat away from Carson.
Yeah,
totally.
I think that's probably just that they haven't put that much effort into campaigning there yet. Bush, poor Bush. Oh, he's in the 5-6% range.
Yeah,
he's just a guy that only 5% of people want to vote for, and that's just how he's going to have to live with himself. Mm-hmm. Santorum also at 1% there. Surprising.
That is a little surprising, actually.
Yeah. That's because no one knows he's running. You have to know he's running.
Yeah.
But in any case, I think the larger story here is that Trump is increasing his lead by saying crazy racist things.
Right.
That's a concerning story.
And we are now going to get into the crazy racist things.
This week was the week where we all disparaged refugees.
Exactly. Yes. Including some Democrats.
Including 47 Democrats.
Put on blast right now.
Who are on notice from us.
Yes.
Most on notice of those Democrats is Julia fucking Brownlee.
Right, because we already hate her anyway for reasons that we have talked about on this podcast. An open letter hit piece is coming your
get
way
ready for
on
that.
The blog.
Julia Brownlee, if you have just joined us, is the world's most annoying campaigner.
Yeah. I actually, in preparation for this blog, took a screenshot of my email inbox, which includes only half of the emails that she has ever sent me, because I am pretty good about deleting them upon the first second that I see them. But she emails at least two to three times a day, dire dramatic emails. And they're all fundraising pleas, by the way. They're never about an issue.
There's no way to know what she thinks.
The only thing that she cares about is
raising money.
Raising money.
After the last election, we were like, okay, finally we can stop with, because we got on her list she bought someone else's list. We didn't sign up for Julia Brownlee's list. She's not our congressperson. And so we were like, finally, we can rest. No more Julia Brownlee emails. Because it got to the point where we were getting multiple Julia Brownlee emails a day. And I still do. And you're still getting them. But it was because when we thought we'd finally get a rest, she started sending ones because there was a recount and she needed funding for the recount.
Right.
And
Which isn't funded by the candidates, by the way. So she was also trying to hoodwink people into giving her money, which really fucking pisses me off.
You've got to be kidding us, Julia Brownlee.
So she's on our list.
She's someone who we have multiple times said that we don't care if a Republican takes that seat. It would save us a lot of personal ire. Yeah. Like, our lives are being made harder by a Democrat having that seat, apparently.
That's right.
She is the most aggressive abuser of email in the history of America.
Also, we may as well have a Republican anyway if she's going to go vote for this.
Voting for this dumb House bill. It was a Republican bill, surprise, that would basically have suspended the program that lets Syrians and Iraqi refugees into the U.S.
Right.
until we could, you know, figure out our security situation. Which, by the way, the FBI director has said we have figured out. Everything's fine. He came in and said, you know, and told the administration that this bill was absolutely insane, would make it harder for people from friendly nations to get into the country as well as refugees, and that our vetting process is fine, that our vetting process does not leave us, you know, open to attack from Syrian refugees. Those fears are fake.
When was the last terrorist attack that we reported on by a Syrian refugee?
We'll wait, because it's going to be forever for you to look that up.
Yeah.
You'll never find it.
No.
It hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So in any case, this was a dumb reactionary bill that served no purpose other than to make us seem like assholes.
Right.
47 Democrats voted for it.
Yeah.
Two Republicans voted against it because it wasn't racist enough.
Right. Steve King.
One of them
Go
was
figure.
Steve King.
Right.
That's confusing.
That's the only way that he would have voted against it.
Basically, there were initially 48 Democrats that were going to vote for this bill, and I think Nancy Pelosi must have been like, you have got to be fucking kidding me, because then they could have overridden a veto. And Obama has threatened to veto this bill.
Yeah.
The Senate is, you know, the Senate Democrats are planning to block this because there is not a filibuster proof majority 60, there.
Right, yeah.
So hopefully it doesn't even make it to the president. But this is not.
I don't hope it does, because that would mean that it had got 60 votes out of the Senate.
Exactly.
But like, part of me would love this to be like one of the vetoes that he actually gets to do.
That's true. And also, I would love to see these 47 Democrats have to override his veto in support of this.
Yeah.
That's a different thing than voting for dumb legislation.
It totally is.
It shouldn't be, though, because fuck you, Julia Brownlee.
Yes.
If you're just going to be fucking terrible and do nothing but harass us for money and shake us down, what do we need you for?
Yeah.
Again, she is not our congressperson. She is a congressperson from a neighboring district that we don't live in.
Yes.
We are not even in the same city as this district.
Yeah.
Nowhere in Los Angeles does
and
she
so
represent.
So many of these emails are like, I only need one more donation from zip code 90046.
Right. It's like you don't need any donations from 90046, because we have our own congressperson to donate to.
Right. And he voted no on this.
Yeah. Like a responsible fucking person should.
Right.
Oh, it's infuriating. Also, some of these Democrats, too many of these 47 Democrats, are from districts that are not even remotely competitive.
Yeah, right? Like,
Tulsi Gabbard
like,
is not in a competitive district.
Yeah.
Voted for this bill.
Yeah.
Marcy Kaptur, not a competitive district. Something like 15-point Democratic lead in that district voted for this bill. You guys,
come on.
Like, I get how, like, I'm not shocked, unfortunately, that Steve Israel voted for this bill.
Right.
He's an asshole, and he's been on my list for a while.
Yeah.
I would imagine a Chuck Schumer-style person, such as Steve Israel, would vote for this bill.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see literally any other Democrat voting for this bill, and I don't want to see Steve Israel reelected.
No.
Those are the two things I want. I don't want to see Steve Israel reelected, and I don't want to see any of the other Democrats in the House voting for this bill.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to single-handedly declare my candidacy against Julia Brownlee. My only platform will be that I will figure out how to remove you from her list.
Yes, that's a campaign
platform. Because the other thing that she did, by the way, guys, is I tried to unsubscribe from her list.
She has like 74 different email accounts that she's emailing you from.
A. B, though, when I said I would like to unsubscribe from as many things as I could, they wrote back a thing that said, thank you for unsubscribing from most of the Julia Brownlee emails.
Yeah.
And there is literally no way to unsubscribe from her
list.
But
like, you get email address, or you get emails from her, and it'll say like, from Julia's iPad,
mm-hmm.
from such and such, or it's from her campaign manager, or it's from like whatever. And like, if you unsubscribe, you're always unsubscribing from certain,
she's the worst abuser of this that we have encountered, and we are on the DCCC email list.
Yes.
So we know how bad it gets.
Right.
We know that when Joe Biden is sending an email that's like, all hope is lost, and then Nancy Pelosi, like,
right.
sends a series of emails that
those
make it seem like she might have
weeks.
Been kidnapped.
Right.
Right. Like, those are bad. This is taking that badness to a level and a degree of melodrama that is not to be believed.
Yeah.
Sorry I had to go on so long about Julia Brownlee.
No, it's appropriate.
What I'm really angry about is these 47 Democrats, but I cannot believe every time something terrible happens in the House, she is one of the terrible Democrats that is doing the wrong thing.
She's awful.
She's awful.
Yeah.
In any case, guys.
Now when we get to the juicy bits yes. of the refugee crisis.
So the Democrats were doing the wrong thing. 47 of them.
47.
Potentially 48, but thanks to Nancy Pelosi, that 48th yeah. person's grandchildren will live to see another day and we will be able to move on with our lives.
Yes.
The Republican candidates had no such.
Oh boy.
Concerns.
Not even
when it came
remotely.
To saying
no.
crazy things
least of
about
all Donald
Syrian
Trump.
Refugees. As you might imagine, Donald Trump was at the forefront
zero
of
fucks
saying horrible things here. About Syrian refugees.
Yeah. He's got all the answers, though. He has a lot of plans.
Got a lot of plans.
Yeah. He was doing an interview on ABC, but earlier in the week, he had said some more insane
yeah.
things. But recently, he said, you know, he wants to have all of these refugees on a watch list, which... is hilarious because Ben Carson also got into some, you know,
watch list saying
things. And what they're wanting is some sort of list that keeps track of the refugees, which we have.
Currently, we have that list.
Like, we are vetting the shit out of these people.
It takes two years
to get in here.
And
if
by
you're
the way,
one of these
two
refugees.
Years when you're living in a war zone is a really long
That's,
fucking
it's
time.
Too long.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not as if we've opened the borders to 50,000 people who are just going to come in and we don't know who any of these people are.
We
know who every single one of them are.
Because they're on a list that we made.
They're on a list that we made. Right, like, exactly. Yeah.
Like, this list idea is...
So if you're a person who is going around demanding that the refugees be on a list,
solved.
Then we did it.
We did it. You can worry no more.
That's right.
In
so,
fact,
anyway.
You can retroactively stop worrying because this right. has been happening this whole time.
Long time. Yeah. Anyway... But he also, he said, he doesn't want to close mosques,
no.
per se. He doesn't want to close
per
them
se.
Down. But things have to happen where you've got to use strong measures. You're going to see buildings coming down all over New York City and elsewhere.
Are you?
Is that what's going to happen?
That doesn't seem like the thing that's going to happen.
It certainly isn't the thing that
is currently happening.
It happened once. So
right.
I,
and not because American mosques were around.
Right.
It wasn't like a mosque in Lower Manhattan took down the World Trade Center. Although people who were against that Lower Manhattan mosque would have you believe that.
Right,
that
exactly.
was not true, guys.
No.
It
yeah.
was Saudi people that
yeah.
came into the United States and took down those buildings.
Yeah.
It was not American Muslims.
Yeah. Interestingly, he did say that he'd support a law barring people on the terror watch list from buying guns, because they can do that now, by the way.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that the Democrats said they would support, too.
Yeah.
The Democrats were like, here is something we would support.
Right. Well,
We would support preventing people who've been to Syria and Iraq in the last 5 years from entering through the visa waiver program, where you waiver the visa. So they
right.
want to make sure everyone is monitored.
Yeah.
And they said that they would support stopping people who are on some sort of terrorism watch list from buying guns and explosives, a thing we currently do allow them
right.
to do.
And didn't somebody from Texas or some terrible place in
oh, yeah.
the South or something
he was like,
say
you can't
this
let,
week?
You can't let refugees in here because our gun laws aren't strict
it's
enough.
It's too easy to get
too
guns
easy to get
here
a gun.
So the refugees can't come here. I mean...
That's not the right answer to that question.
No, it's not.
Like, first
Fix
of all,
laws.
Well, and I got into a long argument with someone this week because they were basically saying, like, it is Islam that's the problem. And I was like, okay, by that logic, what if we got rid of all white men? They're committing a lot more mass murders than everyone else.
That's just doing all the school
shootings.
They are
significantly more likely to commit a mass murder. We have a mass murder almost every day in this country, and they are almost all committed by white men. What if we got rid of white men? Does that solve the problem? And he was like, no, but those are only specific white men that are causing... And I was like, exactly. But statistically speaking, it is more dangerous for me to be in a room with a white man than it is for me to be in a room with anyone else of any color or gender. Yes. So... should we get rid of white men? Is yeah. that the solution? And he was like, no, no. But and I was like, exactly. Like, I'm sick of this logic being used
yeah.
to justify yeah. anything.
Exactly. But the real thing that Donald Trump said this week that I almost said got him into trouble because it didn't.
No,
it
got him got tons him, and tons of support ton, and got ton, him a larger lead in the presidential ton, race.
Yeah, exactly. Is that he supports forcing Muslims to register and carry ID cards stating their religion.
Holy fuck.
Wow.
Like,
yeah,
that's a thing that...
if you're thinking to yourself, that sounds a lot like Nazi Germany.
You're correct.
Then you're right.
It doesn't it sound a lot like... a lot like it. It sounds exactly
sounds like that's
like
where
it.
We would be.
It sounds yeah. like this would... that is... that was literally a policy that was carried out during a time that Germany committed a genocide.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what that sounds like.
God.
There were other people that were talking about internment camps this week. I was like, you guys have got
guys.
To be kidding yourselves right now.
I know.
And all and these are people, by the way, who love making Nazi references.
Yes,
this
I know.
This is the party of Nazi references. They talk about the other people being Hitler all the time.
Yes.
Yep. And they then go speak words that are surprisingly close to words Hitler said about exactly. things that they should be doing.
Yes. Oh, man. The other thing that was fascinating from this interview, which doesn't have anything to do with the refugee crisis, but they asked him about it, so is that they... you know how he signed that ridiculous pledge to not run as
against
a third...
against his will, basically.
Against his will to not run as a third-party candidate? So they asked him about this, and he wouldn't rule out running as a third-party candidate. So he's back to...
being
he's given up on the pledge.
Which was always a sham.
Always a sham.
Yes. Ross Perot 2016.
Yeah, exactly.
He literally is Ross Perot. He's like a lunatic billionaire.
Yep.
Who's just going to drive a wedge into the race with his loony policies that don't fit into any party.
Yep.
And potentially allow a Democrat to just handily walk away with the election.
So good. Yeah.
At the point, by the way, that Donald Trump declares his candidacy, let's put Bernie in.
Yeah, right?
What do we lose from putting Bernie
I know,
in there?
Seriously.
Like, at that point, there is no Republican to win the race.
Yeah.
So let's run our farthest left candidate.
Yeah.
Because we can finally do it. We don't need to compromise if Donald Trump is the third party candidate in the race.
Nope, we don't.
Solved.
Oh, God. So good.
I know. Ben Carson, by the way.
Also had
also
some refugee
speaking some thoughts.
This week.
Some refugee problems, yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, his beginning refugee problem was his huge misunderstanding of how complicated an attack 9/11 was. Because he told an ABC News correspondent that ISIS is a greater threat than Al-Qaeda was in the early 2000s because flying planes into the World Trade Center did not require sophistication.
Okay.
First of all, that was an extreme... like. Not a good thing.
No.
Very sophisticated attack, though.
Yes.
It was years of planning.
Yes.
It was... they had to...
they had to learn how to fly planes.
They had to learn to
sake.
Fly planes and then figure out how to take those planes over midair at the exact same time and have a coordinated attack on four different planes.
Yeah.
That's bonkers, guys.
Yes.
That is planning.
That's planning.
That's sophisticated.
That is.
It's not good.
It's evil.
It's evil, but it's sophisticated.
Yes.
So the fact that he doesn't... that he misunderstands how sophisticated Al-Qaeda is a problem.
Yes.
Because... that is part of the problem that we have in terms of defeating them, is that they are very sophisticated in certain ways. In any case, according to a Washington Post reporter who was there during the same round of comments, he also said regarding Syrian refugees, if there's a rabid dog running around in your neighborhood, you're probably not going to assume something good about that dog, and you're probably going to put your children out of the way. Doesn't mean you hate all dogs by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. So, refugees, rabid dogs.
Here's the thing, guys. If there is a refugee... trying to get in who is brandishing a Kalashnikov and shooting you, it's okay to not let them in.
Right, don't let
That's
them
the rabid dog of the refugee community.
Yeah.
All refugees are not rabid dogs.
Correct.
Because they are just people.
Right.
The guy brandishing the Kalashnikov and threatening to kill you is the rabid dog, and we have never said that we should allow them into the country.
Yeah.
We shouldn't even allow the people currently in the country brandishing Kalashnikovs at people to do what they're doing. Americans who are brandishing Kalashnikovs are also committing a crime. We don't allow them to do that.
No.
So, this metaphor, on top of being insulting, is dumb.
It's insulting to
us. It's insulting to us because it supposes that we don't understand metaphors, which we do.
Exactly.
Kasich also jumped on the case, trying to just make a headline for himself somewhere in the world.
Oh my god. And this is a doozy, actually, because it, much like what Ben Carson just said,
one of the heights of insulting.
It's stupid on levels that I don't think that he was able to process. Yeah. Obviously, because he wouldn't have said it had he realized how dumb it was. Wouldn't. But, like, so he, this week said that he wants to set up an agency with a, quote, mandate to promote what he calls Judeo-Christian values overseas to counter Islamist propaganda.
Hmm.
Okay. He said he would create the new agency to promote the values promote the values of human rights, democracy, and the freedoms of speech, religion, and association. And he said the information would be distributed in the Middle East, China, Iran, and Russia to compete with propaganda and misinformation. He wants to beam it over there.
Yes.
It's what I believe he actually
said.
He literally said he wanted to beam it.
Like we did to the Soviet Union during the Cold War. Yes. A wildly successful strategy that worked out great for us because they're a huge ally now. And also, my favorite thing also is when they talk about this. He said, we need to beam messages around the world about what it means to have a Western ethic, to be part of a Judeo-Christian society. It means freedom. It means opportunity. It means respect for women.
Oh, boy.
It means freedom to gather. It means so many things. Let me tell you one thing that no person in the Republican Party is currently advocating for, and that's respect for women.
Right.
We do not have the right in the Republican Party, not we, they, to talk about respect for women and who does it better.
Right. Well, and I think you, as a non-religious person, had a very important point that I had not exactly considered.
Yeah.
And not because, just only because it hadn't entered my brain. Well,
you'd been to church in the morning.
Being in church,
you were at church. You didn't think this way. You know, in church, you can only think so broadly.
Exactly. Yes.
In any case, well, Bren had said basically that, like, most religions share similar sets of beliefs. So it's not like Judeo-Christian religions own the religious concepts that he's talking about propagating.
Yes.
I would argue that all people share these same...
All non-evil people.
Ultimately share the same values, which is that you don't kill people or bother them.
Right, exactly.
That's it.
And the other thing that is so ridiculous about this is that I think one of the big reasons is that we have a huge terrorist problem right now is because we feel the need to shove this shit down people's throats.
Yes.
Not shit. I mean, it's not shit. But, I mean, you know, I mean, it's
hypocritical the way that we do it.
Right,
so in that sense, it is shit.
Like,
because
to beam this into Islamic countries is going to create more terrorists is what it's going to do.
Yeah, because it's going to make people really fucking angry.
I just, like, and to not get that to me is mind-boggling. Like,
I just
don't get why...
How
do you not know that?
No. Well,
you know?
The other thing that I think is so... like, bizarre about saying this is if there is one religion that ultimately shares almost all the same values with Judeo-Christian religions, it is Islam, which is the most similar to them of any religion in the world.
Yeah.
They're built out of the same tradition. They come from the same tradition and the same civilization.
Same God.
The same God, supposedly. These are the big three. These are the religions that cause all the strife in the world together. You know, it's not like he was like, we need to create something to promote Hindu values because not enough people are advocating for that.
Right.
He's talking about a religion that is ultimately so similar to Judeo-Christian religions that it is advocating the exact same values. And in that sense, just as Islamist extremists are advocating
not respect for women, perhaps
Islamist extremists are not advocating the same respect for, but you know who also aren't? Evangelical Christians.
Yep.
I mean, the extreme versions of all of these religions,
totally.
As are fundamental, like, you know, Hasidic Jews.
Yeah.
Are trapping women and not educating them. I mean, none of these religions advocate respect for women
That's
in the
true.
Way that you would hope.
Yeah, you're right.
And just as none of the extreme versions of these religions advocate respect for women, none of the mild versions of these religions are all that problematic.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I am a person who would live in a world without any religions happily.
Of course.
I think they're all insane. I actually had an extra epiphany this morning where I was walking down the street. This is while Brent was at church. I had told Brent to say hello to God for me. And then I said, actually don't say hello to someone real. And then he wrote back done. And so I was talking to my parents about.
But I was actually declaring that church was done.
Oh, church. Yeah. Right. And I was like, I wonder who he said hello to, because it read like he had said hello to somebody for me. Just very polite. But then I was walking down the street talking to my dad, and I had somehow an extra epiphany about how I really don't get religion. It was like I had an additional anti-religious epiphany where I was like, science and math are so logical. How do you fight science? And then I just couldn't Get it out of my head. I became, like, extra enraged by religion today for some reason.
Well, I would say that as a religious person, you don't have to fight science.
Well, no, Brent is not fighting science. But I just sort of, like, had a moment where I was like, I cannot...
I would say a large majority of Christians would probably
agree with that. Yeah. No, I just, like, had an epiphany where I was like, I cannot imagine believing anything beyond the facts that I know could be true.
Sure. Well, and that's
which
of,
is fine.
That's and
that's
that is
my
at
prerogative
the heart of the debate. I mean, exactly. That's sort of what faith is. But I mean, yes, of
right.
course.
So I basically said I could not imagine having faith, and and then I was like,
and some people
can't. I literally can't imagine it.
And that
doesn't mean I think murdering people is okay.
That's what I was just gonna say. Like as a person who identifies as Christian, that I think that
that's
okay
fine.
For you.
Right. That's right? My choice.
Like because you're not awful.
No.
You know. Like, I mean,
you don't have to be an awful person to not. But yeah, that was it was like the moment basically where I was like, having faith doesn't even make sense in my head in a logical way. And then I had to yammer about it to my dad for a really long time.
Well, Mike Huckabee had to yammer about it
this
week too, because he wants to make sure that we call these people what they are.
That's right.
They are Islamic terrorists, radical, you know, they're Islam. That's what they are. They're radical Muslims.
That's right.
And he said he was on Morning Joe, and he said, if Episcopalians were the ones who were wreaking havoc and raping women indiscriminately, cutting people's heads off, I think we'd say, we'd better be careful with these Methodists until we check them out to find out, are they radical Methodists? Are they normal Methodists? So Mike Huckabee is really worried about radical
Methodists. Here's a thing that I would argue, we're not doing that nearly enough. There
know,
are
right?
radical Christians all over
we
this
country. We should try and find out who the radical... evangelicals
are,
who are probably voting for him.
Exactly. They are problematic. We should find out who they are. We're not doing it.
No.
So we've just proven that his point is not even a little bit true. He also went the route, the rabid dog route.
Yes.
Where he also said, let me ask you this. If you bought a 5-pound bag of peanuts, and you knew that in the 5-pound bag of peanuts there were about 10 peanuts that were deadly poisonous, would you feed them to your kids? The answer is no. So if we're going to help these refugees, why don't we do it in an area closer to where they're being refugees from?
Now, what I would say to him is if I had the opportunity to open the bag of peanuts and tell which 10 were poisonous and then remove them, then I would feed the peanuts
correct.
To the children.
Also, what I would say is that peanuts are disgusting and it's insulting to use peanuts as a metaphor for Syrian refugees.
Right. But, like, that metaphor
that,
obviously
that metaphor
the
also
point.
Misses the point, as if we don't get metaphors. It's so insulting the way they use metaphors with us, these people.
Boy.
But also, I love the idea of, well, why don't we just house them somewhere closer? Like, the whole point of this discussion is that there's not enough places closer for them to go.
Right. That's why they're fleeing to, you know, to Europe right now.
Exactly.
I mean,
to
Western Europe.
Right. And that's why some would be, like, first of all, no Syrian refugee is thinking to themselves, now I finally get to travel 6,000 miles across the world from my friends and family
and
to go live in some horrible state in a
boat and like, potentially, you know, drown
like,
on
it's
my
not,
way there.
They're not leaving because they want to come to America. They're leaving because they want to get out of Syria.
Right.
Like, we're not offering some great privilege. It's like how in like
and you know
Sweden,
what they're running from?
Us.
Terror.
They're
running from, you know,
they're running from
like,
terror.
Like, that's the other thing that I feel like is...
They're running from the very thing that we don't want.
Has been lost in this conversation all week.
Of course.
These people are not terrorists.
No.
They are
trying
to get away from that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing that's so bonkers about this whole discussion to begin with.
It's too crazy.
The basis for this conversation is...
It's stupid.
Is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a stupid basis for a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Meanwhile, you know you're in deep shit when Jeb exclamation point Bush has to be the one to sound...
He can't be the reasonable person.
He cannot be the reasonable person, guys.
Mm-mm.
He's polling behind wouldn't vote in the race.
Right.
That's not the
and
answer.
And this is why, probably, because he is the reasonable one.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to hear this nonsense. It's
he
not
basically
nonsense.
Was like, listen, I get that this is a threat, but let's not get crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ultimately sums up what he said.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about how we have to have a balanced approach to this.
Yeah.
We can't let our head go wild with fear and let ourselves get... you know, sort of too strung up in fake straw man fears that we've invented and not do anything.
Well, and he referenced things in the past. He was like, you know, we've done things in
that
our history where we
afterwards.
Felt bad about internment camps and things like that. And I think we need to be cautious. We go through this not to get to a point where our emotions overtake our brain.
That is a concerning thing to have only him saying in the race, guys.
Right.
Don't let Jeb Bush be the only sense maker in
the
race.
He can't be the one using his brain.
No.
Because that's not
he
good
He can't
either.
Be the one where John Kasich is not using his brain and Jeb Bush is using his brain.
Yeah.
I will say that as much as they are the worst people on earth, the Bush family has always shied away from actively demonizing through you know, sort of inflammatory language.
Right. Even
Muslims.
Even George.
Even
Bush
George was
wouldn't do that.
Wouldn't
after,
do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only redeeming thing that he did after 9/11.
Right.
So
exactly.
I mean, I will say that the Bush family seems they're horrible and evil and power hungry.
Right.
But they're not outwardly racist against Muslims in the way that the rest of the party is.
Yes.
They're only minorly racist.
It's interesting.
Yeah. It's concerning. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
I don't trust. I never know what to think about.
Yeah.
When they do things that aren't crazy.
Yeah.
In any case. Anonymous, the only group that's actually doing something productive in the war against ISIS, has settled on a new immature strategy because there are a bunch of 17-year-old boys in their parents' basements. So they have this hashtag Op Paris situation going on where they're taking down Twitter accounts associated with ISIS.
Yeah. They're supposedly taking down like 20,000
of them. Yeah. It's probably
like that,
the only productive thing that anyone is doing to fight them, by the way, because bombing them is just making them stronger.
Right.
But taking down their means of communication is really a constructive thing that we can do to fight them.
Yeah.
So they've taken down a whole bunch of Twitter accounts, and they've published a sort of how-to hacking guide to fight ISIS. apparently now they're flooding popular pro-ISIS hashtags with Rickrolling.
So good.
They're back to Rickrolling. 8 years on, we're still Rickrolling, everyone.
Still doing it. Yeah.
As you probably remember, this was a popular and very annoying meme like 8 years ago that started on 4chan in 2007. And it's been used to protest everything. And it's been used just to annoy everyone, too, because being Rickrolled is very annoying.
It's annoying.
But you basically just post Rick Astley videos.
Uh-huh.
From, you post Never Gonna Give You Up, specifically.
Never Gonna Give You Up. Yep.
And just have phony links with Never Gonna Give You Up posted,
right.
Basically.
Video.
Yeah. It just never stops being a thing that happens.
It just might work.
It's
crazy enough to work.
It's got
to
be better than bombing everyone. No one dies when they're forced to watch Never Gonna Give You Up for the 4 millionth time.
Yeah.
It's just annoying.
And you might
it's
stop
not deadly.
Wanting to bomb other people.
Right. If you have to listen to that annoying upbeat song so much.
Oh, God.
It's just like, it's too good. P.S. guys, speaking of horrible Republican ideas.
Yeah.
It's not just the candidates that are having them.
No.
Their supporters are also having them.
Yes. Or their fans.
They're fans. Yeah, they're fans. Yeah. Well, Donald Trump's supporters are not supporters. They are just fans.
Right.
Because he is a sideshow.
He called them his
fans. Yeah, he called them his fans because he knows what's going on.
Yeah, he does.
He had a rally that got Black
just
Lives Matter.
Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. It got Black Lives Mattered.
Yep.
A guy.
It's
you
a
know,
verb now.
That's a verb now. Yeah. Broke in saying Black Lives Matter. A fight broke out and basically ended in a mob standing around this lone man kicking him and shouting at him.
Yes. They had to remove them. They had
fucking
to get
civil
people...
rights movement style, angry, violent
and
racist
And they were trying
mob.
To choke him, too, because some guy put
right, some
their
woman
hand
had
on
to be like,
neck.
Don't choke him.
Don't choke him. Yeah, exactly.
Guys,
come on.
This is not it.
Yeah.
If you need security to remove protesters because you want to carry on being racist, that's what you do.
And if you think Donald Trump
said... But the thing
Trump
that you
said,
don't do is also after this guy has been beaten by the mob, you don't arrest him.
No.
Someone in the mob has to be arrested, too. That's how it works now.
Yeah. And now
it's
the thing
1967 guys.
The thing that any responsible person would have done, even if you don't agree with the Black Lives Matter movement, is say, I don't agree with the Black Lives Matter movement, but we are not about, you know, being
punching
an angry
people.
Mob and punching people at campaign events.
No.
That's not what happened here,
no.
actually. Because what Donald Trump said, he said, maybe he should have been roughed up. Yeah, that's right.
Oh.
Because it was absolutely disgusting what he was doing. I have a lot of fans. And
okay.
they were not happy about it. And this was a very obnoxious guy who was a troublemaker who was looking to make trouble.
You know what he didn't do at any point is cause a violent reaction.
Right, exactly.
He didn't punch anyone and scream Black Lives Matter. All he screamed Black Lives Matter and got punched. That's not the same
and
thing.
Kicked.
And kicked. That's not the same thing as causing the trouble.
No.
He's not the troublemaker in that scenario.
No.
In that scenario, he was the trouble victim.
Yes, that's right.
Like... Unbelievable.
I mean, he went to
and then they also started screaming All Lives Matter at him.
Yeah,
like, oh, you guys are so clever.
Clever, yeah. Oh, God.
Ugh.
The worst.
The worst.
I mean, this, guys, can't...
This can't be it.
This can't be it. This can't be the next president.
No.
And I'm not actually concerned about him winning, but
no,
like...
No, he can't win the general, I don't think.
But it's like, it also just sort of, like, makes me sad for...
This showcases a really disgusting side of
makes
us.
Me sad for... almost 40% of, like, one of our governing parties in this country. I mean,
no,
it's disgusting.
Even the
they
Tea Party
be,
only has 40 seats in Congress.
Right, exactly. They should be disgusted with themselves.
Yeah.
Because
well, and
they're
I think,
being disgusting.
I think that this is creating a kind of schism in the party that is even more dramatic than what they saw last time.
Yeah.
That is going to be very hard to recover from.
Yeah.
Because someone's going to have to explain why 40% of the people that were allowing to elect our, one of the major parties, you know, candidates, thought that any of this was an acceptable thing to think or say or do.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not acceptable.
Right.
This is not civilized behavior.
No, it's not.
This is this doesn't uphold the Judeo-Christian values that John Kasich would like to broadcast abroad.
Right.
Oh, my God. Boy. And if things aren't bad enough, Sarah Palin may or may not be considering a run for office.
Attempted to sort of threaten us with running for public office.
Here's
but
the quote,
unclear.
Because so we need you to help us decipher it.
First off, she was on Fox Radio
right.
doing an interview with Brian Kilmeade to promote her new book, Sweet Freedom.
Stop that.
So that statement that I just said aloud is something that I hope I never have to say again.
So true.
Like any of those words. But
Kilmeade asked her if she'd ever run for public office again. Here's what she said. I'd consider a run for office because we know that we're equipped with passions, with interests. We're given those by our creator, and they're put in us not to frustrate us or tease us, or to just sit on those interests or those gifts of talent, but they're to put us on a road towards fulfillment, towards productivity, ultimately helping other people. And I know that built within me is certainly passion for this country.
Oh, boy.
What does that mean? Does that mean she's running for office again? Does that mean she's open to it? Does that mean she's not, but she just knows she's a person of passion? Is that...
Right.
Does it mean that she's a person of passion?
Well, she is a person who is, quote, living my life, putting it in God's hands. You just never know what door may be opened. And if that door was opened, I'm built to run through it.
That is a very curious way to put a sentiment that I'm not clear on how to identify.
No. Like, that was her, like, capping off sentence where she was, like, re-explained
Vote
herself.
For me.
But also, like, said nothing.
Still said nothing. Yeah. So she continues to be a word salad purveyor.
Love it.
Of the highest order.
Yeah.
And in final news, the G20 summit happened in Turkey last week, as we know.
Yeah, we don't so much care about that.
Don't care that much about what happened there. Here's what we do care about. A horde of stray cats broke in and just started wandering around the stage. This is just like cats to do.
It totally is
they
like
did
cats to do.
Just what cats do, which is they wandered around, sniffed flowers, and looked at everyone.
Yep.
That's exactly.
Judged them.
Judged them, as cats do.
Yep.
And then wandered away.
Yeah.
Turkey has a problem with cats, stray cats.
Right.
Which any place that isn't actively killing all the cats has, because cats are just fucking everywhere.
Right. The Wall Street Journal prompted the Wall Street Journal to say that Istanbul should be called Catstantinople, which is quite clever.
Yes. But so, in any case, if you were at the G20 summit, aside from all of the annoying politicians and heads of state that you were forced to encounter, you were also fighting your way through a horde of cats.
Cats.
And
we know how cat hordes go. You were dealing with them for a long time.
I have
in your
a very
apartment.
Specific
cat gangs.
Yeah, perspective on cat gangs.
Yeah,
they're not to be trusted.
It's a real no.
They're up
it's
to
a,
no good.
And if you think that we're making this up as like some sort of like ridiculous, you know, fairy tale, it's a real threat.
It's a real threat that I've lived.
Yeah,
I've lived with the threat of cat gangs,
I
only barely escaped with my life. In any case, that's the news this week. We may be back next week if there's news. If not, we'll be enjoying our Thanksgivings
right,
and
well,
we'll return in 2 weeks.
Back home, which will be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And so if we are not back next week, we'll see you in 2 weeks. But if there's something exciting that happens, we're gonna record anyway.
Style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But so stay tuned the next time we're around and look out for our Julia Brownlee open letter
because we're
not fucking around.
Coming for you.
That's right. We'll talk to you in a certain number of weeks.
Bye.